Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and that's Summertime from Porgy and Bess, as performed by Miles Davis and Gil Evans. On this day in 1935, George Gershwin's opera Porgy and Bess premiered on Broadway. And you're listening to an archived edition of The Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. So we're not accepting calls, but please send us your feedback at steinershow@gmail.com. Now back to our segment. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome to another one of our Urbanite Radio stories. And this is a fascinating one. Justin Sirois is with us in studio. He's the author of Milking Sickles.
Yes, right.
Milking Sickles and the soon-to-be-published novel Falcons on the Floor, and co-founder of what's called the Understanding Campaign. The other co-founder is Hanin Al-Shajari, who joins us from Cairo. She and her family fled Baghdad at the beginning of the Iraq War in 2003, and they spent 2 years in Jordan, and they moved to the city of Cairo in Egypt on October 6th, where she's currently studying dentistry.
Yes.
So welcome, both of you. Good to have you with us.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, no, this is great. I almost feel like I'm in Cairo. I can hear the traffic. That's good.
Yeah, the window's open. So, I should probably close this one.
No. Leave it open. I like the sound effects. It's good.
Really?
Leave it.
Okay.
So, Justin, let me begin and talk about this passion you began to have for around the Iraq War and when you were a student, I believe it. You were a student still at MICA then, right?
I had just finished MICA.
Just finished MICA.
Maybe 2 years before the war started.
But something happened to you around this war, and your response to it was a little different than most people who opposed the war. Talk a bit about what happened to you.
I think right in 2003, I started writing poetry about the war, and I did that for a few years, and I didn't really find it that effective. People were reading it, but I really wasn't happy with how many people I was reaching with that kind of work. And I always wanted to write stories, and I had a few pretty awful failed attempts at writing novels that weren't political at all. And then in 2007, this is when this work began, late 2007.
What do you mean by this work? Describe this work for our listeners.
Well, the novel that Hanin and I have collaborated on creatively is called Falcons on the Floor. And we also have a book of short stories that came out before Falcons called Milking Sickles. And it specifically follows the account of two young men leaving Fallujah in April of 2004, right after the Blackwater tragedy. So,
when the four men from Blackwater were killed.
Yes.
And their burnt corpses dragged to the street.
Absolutely, in Fallujah. And it's about these two young men who they don't want to fight in the uprising, and they leave the city on the eve of the first siege. And it follows their journey up the Euphrates River to Ramadi.
Another Iraqi city.
Yes. Yep.
And Hanin, tell us about quickly your story and your leaving Baghdad and what your sojourn was.
Yeah, well, it was in 2003, I believe. The war happened, and we had to relocate to Fallujah during the war because we actually lived in Baghdad. I lived in Baghdad for 14 years, and then we had to, when the war happened, we moved to Fallujah. And because it was a bit safer there than Baghdad, because all the bombing and everything happened in Baghdad, actually. So, and when the war ended, we moved back to Baghdad, and then my dad decided that it wasn't safe anymore for us to live there. So we moved to Jordan on August 2003.
And now you live in Cairo.
Yep. 3 years later, moved to Cairo.
A big part of this story about the Iraq War is the story of exile.
Yes, absolutely. I don't believe enough people are really talking about that, but there's millions of displaced people that haven't been back in years. And Hanin, you haven't been back in 7 years, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, but your mother goes back every now and then?
Yeah. To see the house and my family over there.
Yeah.
I have two families there, the ones that live in Baghdad and the ones that live in Fallujah.
Right.
So she goes every now and then to check her sisters and see them.
Yeah, and your father's side is from Fallujah.
Fallujah, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, the people I've talked to who are in exile, most of them that I know at this point don't want to go back to live.
Yeah.
Yes,
I think that's true.
But how did you two meet? I mean, here you are, Justin, writing this piece about Iraq, and we'll talk about all this and how it developed. But tell us a bit about that. I mean, you have this passion. You want to do something to end the war. You want to do something to speak out about the war.
Mm-hmm.
And speak about people's lives.
Mainly people's lives.
And Iraqi lives.
Yes.
So why?
Gosh, I think after reading a few books, I read Bing West's Beyond the No True Glory, and which is kind of a door-by-door account of what happened in Fallujah, both in April and November of 2004. And then I read Dar Jamal's Beyond the Green Zone, which is a very unembedded account. So it's kind of like the opposite of Bing mm-hmm, West's book. Mm-hmm. And I just got terribly upset about the whole thing. And
so what do you mean you got terribly upset? What about reading those books made you terribly upset?
I don't want to go into too much detail, but just the United States' reaction to the Blackwater massacre, and it was an awful massacre, was inappropriate. And some of the things that happened there were pretty, pretty bad. And I wanted to talk about that, and I wanted to talk about the people that went through that particular experience and kind of explore the civilian side of those two sieges. So,
and Hanin, how did you enter into this picture with Justin Soroy's work?
Well, we met through a website. I joined a website called My Language Exchange. It was for people who wanted to learn languages and culture, exchange their culture. So we met on there. He sent me a message saying that he wanted to write a book about Iraq from an Iraqi perspective, and I was happy to help.
So you two have never met personally, but you've met by phone and emails and...
This is the second time we've talked on the phone.
Just the second time?
Yeah, ever.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, how do you work together and not talk to you? Just by email?
Yeah, it's incredible. Email and GChat is, or Facebook chat.
Facebook chat.
Incredibly effective.
Really?
And free. So, you know, when we were working on Falcons, I would just kind of write 30 pages at a time and email that draft to Hanin, and she would look at it. And within a couple of days, she would have edits and a good critique, and we would go from there.
Huh.
Yeah.
So Hanin, tell me about you, where you learned English.
School. We actually study English in school.
In Iraq?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Iraq and in Jordan and Egypt, everywhere. Mm. My study in university is all in English.
Where are you in university in Cairo? Where do you go to school?
It's called MSA University. It's, I think, in Giza.
In Giza.
Yes. Mm. The place is called Giza, I believe.
So this is fascinating. I mean, this is a story of multi-layered story here, because before we talk about the campaign itself, the understanding campaign, which we're going to dive into in a minute, it's just the story. This is a story about two people seeking each other's cultures and understanding the world together, a man and a woman from different places completely who have never met, whose entire conversations take place in the netherworld of the cyber world.
Yeah.
Talking about
it's a little crazy.
Talking about the harshest reality that you can talk about, which is war.
Yes.
And the devastation of human beings.
Yes. Yeah, it's strange that one of, I think, the greatest tragedies of our generation has brought two people together like this, you know. And we still haven't met, but it's a strange irony. Strange irony in there.
So tell me what you both think about what this is doing. I mean, you spoke I'll start with you, Justin, and then go to Hanin. I mean, you spoke about being very frustrated that your poems weren't really working in terms of having an effect on what you wanted to touch. So talk about it now, where you are with this.
Well, Milking Sickles came out about a year and a half ago.
What does Milking Sickles mean to you?
You know what? I don't even know.
That's perfect.
I love the sound of it.
Because my first poetry book I wrote, I still don't know why I named it that, which is... Yeah. What are you doing in the middle of the road, and why didn't you bring home the fish? People say, what does that mean? I have no idea.
But it sounds great.
It sounds great.
We're on the same page.
So go ahead.
I think inherently stories and narrative and character capture people, well, differently than poetry. But I know our audience has grown with that book of short stories. So we've created these two characters that I think people really, really love. And they're honest. They're just real people. You know, like, I think they could be in any country in any time period walking up the Euphrates River, and they'd have the same problems about identity and being true to themselves. So it's a pretty universal story that I really think people are kind of grabbing onto.
Well, I'll come back to this. I want you to both give our listeners a sense of what that story is who have not read the book, so they can go get it and read it.
Okay.
But, Haneen, what has this meant for you, though? Talk about what you're doing in this, besides finding each other on the internet and then working together to create this novel. What has this meant to you?
Well, it meant a lot. I mean, we first started working on a novel that I felt connected to. And me and Justin, I thought, I don't know, it's just that when we worked together and we made this book that really talked about how we lived and how Iraqis are, and in a way that is different, not like the way that others look at. Like, if you go to America and ask a person, how do you think an Iraqi would look like or act or talk, they wouldn't give what Justin gave in that book, which is the real thing. Justin talked about Iraqis and how they are normal people who live normal lives and have social lives that they just want to go day by day. And that, so, I don't know. It was kind of cool to be in such a project. And then we continued with the novel, and now the campaign. It's great. It's great to be a part of it.
I'd like you both to take a minute, if it's possible, to pick a passage that to you signifies what the essence of this book is.
Okay. Well, I'll read the title. In Milking Sickles, all the entries are written on a laptop, and the titles are the battery power that's remaining on the laptop. So it's slowly diminishing, and hopefully...
Seen to the eyes of these two Iraqi young men.
Yes.
Right.
So this is Salim typing. Last night I dreamt about a mutt whose tail never learned how to wag, and under a sun that gagged us with heat, the mutt sat stoned with his mouth belching cones of pot smoke. Sometimes that smoke shone orange. Sometimes it had the texture of kefirs. People passed it in the street, not looking between its ears. No one ever pet the mutt. Men on bicycles swerved around it. Cars pulled U-turns. Buses sped by. It was part something, but mostly something else. Its nose was badly burnt. It jiggled like cooked fat.
Haneen?
Khalil here says, you know what would be great right now? And Salim says, what? And he thinks, if he says swimming, I'm going to break his nose. Then Khalil says, a cigarette. It's so cliche that I have to pass it off as a small talk, just something to dispel the tension. We've been talking all day, staring at the river. I chew the inside of my cheek and look away. Whatever, you don't really smoke. He snickers. Yeah. But I know he'd smoke as often as he curses if cigarettes were as cheap as the crap that continually sail off his tongue. Khalil indulges vices only comfortable to his economic situation, and both our situations are shitty. We keep walking. The clicking starts again. So good. This one is my favorite, actually.
Now, why is that your favorite, Haneen?
I don't know, because it's so real and so... funny. I don't know. I found it very funny because the finishing of the story is very fantastic.
Now, what you're saying, this is interesting to me. Here we have an American who has never been to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
You don't speak Arabic, do you?
Three words.
All right. So Arabic is in similar places. Though I understand some Arabic because of Hero. I understand some Arabic when it's spoken. But so you don't know Arabic, you don't know Iraq, you have a passion for creating understanding because of a war that this country created in Iraq, and the two of you are collaborating on a novel about the soul of young people in Iraq, really,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
How does that happen? I mean, how do you, I first want to ask you, Justin, how do you get inside the soul of a young Iraqi?
Okay.
And then I want to ask Haneen how well he does it. Go ahead, Justin.
I sort of approached it a few two different ways. I did as much research as I could, read as much as I could, watch as much as I could. But then I knew that I had to approach this quote-unquote war story from a very personal human perspective. And the more research I did, the more I realized that we're all the same. You know, we all have the same wants and needs and desires. And I knew if I took a step back and just wrote it that way, then it would be a sort of successful.
Yeah. Honey, tell me what you think about this work and about how closely this touches the world you know.
Well, he did a pretty good job. And that's what kept me going. And that's what it was at first. His message, it was a cool message that he sent me at first, saying that he was a professional writer and stuff like that. But then when he started sending these drafts, I knew that this guy is the real thing. He sent it like he had the soul. And it's not that we're very different. It's like we both have same lives. So when he put it in a way that made it so close to him and so close to me at the same time, I knew that it was real good, real good.
In many ways, what you felt, Justin Sirois, was, and what your passion for this, really your guide and interpreter to what it was meant to be Iraqi and to be a young Iraqi, was Hanin al-Shajari.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like this incredible symbiotic cultural literary relationship you two have.
I never expected it to gel or develop this profoundly. I think initially, Hanin, we were just kind of, I didn't really tell you about the book until maybe a month or two into me interviewing you.
Yeah, and I was really professional at first.
Yeah, I was afraid. I was really scared.
Very formal.
I didn't know what you would think, and I was really kind of timid at first. But then I think after we started trusting each other, it really worked out.
Now, let's talk a bit about this understanding campaign and the Fahem.
Fahem.
Fahem. Fahem. I'm saying it like it's Hebrew. Fahem. Fahem.
Yes?
Let's talk about Fahem, the word Fahem, the Arabic word Fahem, and where that comes from.
It literally means understanding. And we wanted to choose one word to teach the entire world. I know that's kind of a huge endeavor, but we want to teach the entire world one word of Arabic.
And what does that mean?
What does it mean?
What does it mean you want to teach the world one word of Arabic? What does that mean to you?
You know, it's funny because we've printed these stickers and buttons and stuff.
Yeah, I have the buttons.
With the word.
Stickers, yeah.
And it creates an instant dialogue between people. Even if, I don't want to say even if, like usually when I'm walking around with a button on, people have no idea what it means. And I don't know if it's disarming to them or if it's arming to them. But I've had so many conversations with people that say, "What in the world is that on your shirt?" You know, and it starts this sometimes really long dialogue about why is it so strange to learn one word of Arabic? Why is that such a step for certain people, and why do people resist that gesture? And I think a lot of times when I get resistance to it, I break it down for people like this. You know, if I were studying French and I wanted you to learn one obscure French word, would there be any resistance at all? And that opens up a huge dialogue. Like, oh, like, all right, why is Arabic so, why is it confrontational in our society? You know? So just, I think, acknowledging that fact and trying to depoliticize one Arabic word for people is almost a political gesture to depoliticize a word.
And Hanin is co-founder of Fahem, Understanding, mm-hmm. the Fahem campaign. Tell me what it means for you and to you.
Well, the word itself, I think it is a symbol. I mean, if one person was walking in the street and saw that word, initially they would get curious about it and they would want to know more. And that was the idea that me and Justin had about it. Like, we wanted people to get curious. We wanted them to know more about the different cultures that are around the world without getting defensive or attacking other cultures without understanding it. So that was initially it, and then it's spread. Now everyone wants to know our goals, and we decided that we wanted to make some huge literary projects that we're willing to do eventually, I hope, after this whole thing works out, hopefully.
Yes.
So you finish that thought, Hanin, and then we'll go to Justin. And I'm curious what that means. What do you mean? Where does Fahem go? Where does Fahem go?
Hopefully into something very bigger. I have, like, some dreams about it, because it started as something really small with one word, and we only wanted people to learn this word and to understand it, and hopefully they'll do on their own and go and ask for to know more about the culture itself. But now that it's spread, and now that we have the Kickstarter, and people are excited about it, and they want to donate and give money to help our project, we started to think of bigger goals, like cross-cultural projects between the Arab and the West, and how we can benefit each other.
Justin.
Yeah. There's a few specific things that we've been working on. There's a book donation program that we're trying to develop for Iraqi university libraries that really, really need current resources.
In Iraq,
specifically in Iraq and Anbar province. And luckily, Hanin and her father have contacts in a few universities. But even building those simple contacts and that infrastructure is really difficult for us, just like getting a solid email address. But we're really in our infancy right now. Like Hanin said, like learning Fahem, learning this one word, Fahem, was basically the foundation, and people seem to love it. They're really getting behind it. And, guest artists are reinterpreting the word for us, and luckily it's a really beautiful form. So designers and artists they're really happy to kind of tackle this design problem or this art problem. It's incredible how many people have taken this simple idea and attached themselves to it.
I'm really so taken and fascinated with this. This is just really marvelous. And I what I'm looking forward to is having a continuing conversation with Justin Sirois and Hanin Al-Shujari. Did I say your last name right, Hanin Al-Shujari?
Not really.
How do you say it?
It's Al-Shujari.
Al-Shujari?
Shujari. It's kind of difficult, so Al-Shujari will do good.
Shujari. Okay. Al-Shujari.
Al-Shujari.
It's difficult, I know.
We don't for him.
No, it's a beautiful name. And I want to thank both of you for doing this. And the Bookmaking Sickles Understanding Campaign, Fahem, will be on our website, signashow.org. And this will just be a first in a series of conversations we want to create with Justin and Hanin and others to create Fahem in our world. And thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Said the signifying monkey to the lion one day, "Hey, there's a great big elephant down the way, going round talking, I'm sorry to say, about your mama."
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. To hear this show again, podcast past shows, and find out information about our guests and the work they do, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And you can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes. And on our way out of here, it's the great Oscar Brown Jr., one of the greatest songs of all time, one of my favorites, "Signifying Monkey." Oscar Brown Jr. born on this day in 1926. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.
With a mighty roar, took off like a shot from a .44. He found the elephant where the tall grass grows and said, "I come to punch you in your long nose." The elephant looked at the lion in surprise and said, "Boy, you better go pick on somebody your size." But the lion wouldn't listen. He made a pass. The elephant slapped him down in the grass. The lion roared and sprung from the ground. And that's when that elephant really went to town. I mean, he whipped
that line for the rest of the day, and I still don't see how the line got away. But he dragged on more dead than alive, and that's when that monkey started his signifying jive. Signifying monkey, stay up in your tree. You are